you may have seen is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. Find out more at queencitypodcastnetwork.com.
Actors, right? The road to fame and celebrity. All right, I get it. You've had an incredible life.
Aren't you sick of hearing about them?
Me too.
The only problem is, I'm one of them. Except I'm not famous. Oh, you've probably seen me. A bunch of times. I'm the guy with the information about the hero's dad. I'm the doctor that can't figure out what's wrong with one of the main characters. I'm the guy they just punched in the face during the interrogation. My name's Brian LaFontaine, and I'm a professional actor. Oh, and it's not just me. There's a ton of us.
We're the ones you don't hear about.
Yeah, we're the names that scroll by at lightning speed during the end credits. But there's way more of us than there are of them. We're important too, dammit. Because without us, they can't tell the rest of the story. So this is for all the movie and TV prostitutes, homeless people, drug dealers, cab drivers, cops numbers 2, 3, and sometimes 4, the pilots, the waitresses, and girl at party.
This is You May Have Seen. Today I'm talking with one of my absolute most favorite people in the world, Chris Stacy. Every time I hang out with this guy, my face is sore from laughing and smiling so much. This guy is insanely talented, and his story of life as an actor is one of my all-time favorites. We talk about working with Barbara on Prince of Tides, why Dopey from the Seven Dwarves is such a complex character, and where you can get a good fart machine. Damn,
dude, you look good. You look really good.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
We don't look great at all. We're like hot.
No. Oh, my God, yeah. Fighting them off with a stick. With a stick. Yeah. They're knocking on the door. That's why you had to move to Oxnard. Get away from it all.
Yes, all the chicks all over me, the young chicks.
So
I just look creepy. There's no way that that's a real thing. You know what I mean? You're like, hey, baby, it's like creepy.
No, you're
creepy
old
guy.
Yeah, you're old enough to be my dad. You look like my dad's friend.
Mm-hmm.
That's gross.
The guy always has a beer when you see him?
Yeah. Hey, you sure are aging nicely. You're growing up good.
Who are you? Your daddy home.
So, Chris Stacy, where may we have seen you?
You probably haven't seen me in a while, to be honest. But I mean, like, on television or whatever,
right.
I guess.
Yes.
The last thing I did a Modern Family.
Yes.
I had a bit from that.
Yes, you did.
I haven't really been chasing that much acting work in the last few years. Like, I guess Prince of Tides is a good one.
It is a good one.
I was the guy who killed the rapist, the guy who comes running in with a shotgun. That's the one that I use.
You played Luke, right? The older brother and all the flashbacks? Yeah.
Yes, with the shotgun.
Directed by Barbara Streisand, by Barbara.
Yes. And she said to me, she said, you're so mad, you're so angry, you want to kill these motherfuckers. And I'm trying to stay in character, and I'm trying to stay pissed, and, you know, I got Barbara Streisand in my face with what looks like a fisheye lens, like she's coming right at me. You want to kill these motherfuckers.
Now, how old are you at this point?
I was 18 for that one.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's 30 years ago.
No way. That's crazy to think about it like that. 30 years ago.
Yes, sir. And it still gives the best residuals.
I bet. That was a big hit.
It's not big anymore, but out of, you know, you get the ones that are 22 cents. You know, it still comes up with, like, you know, 50-some bucks or something. So thank you, Ben.
I'm not saying this because this is an interview and people are going to listen to it. This is the absolute truth. You are one of my absolute, like, all-time favoritest people ever. Like, I have been wanting to talk to you and interview you since this. I started doing this whole podcast thing. I was like, I got to find a way to be able to sit down and talk to Chris because your story is one of my absolute favorites.
You're very sweet.
Thank you. I know some of the story, so I'm basically just going to say, tell it to me. Give me the story.
Okay. Well, obviously, you know, I met you when I lived in Charlotte, and I used to do a lot of theater back there and voiceovers and just kind of everything. And little by little, I started getting some gigs.
Right.
I got my first movie role was on a film called Born to Race with George Kennedy.
Oh, my God.
If you know the Charlotte Speedway.
Yeah.
The camera was like on the far, far, far side of the racetrack, right? And I was an extra down in the pits. I mean, I guarantee you couldn't even see me. I guarantee it. And I got $25 for the day.
Nice.
But, you know, out there by a car. I couldn't even see where the camera was.
Right.
You know, we're just filler.
Yeah.
And I remember I was really into it. You know, I was all methoding out on it. And, like, you know, I was studying the car. this is, you know, I'm Pickford. And you couldn't even see me.
Right.
And I got $25 and I ended up playing chess for the day. And it was just a weird thing. And I heard George Kennedy was somewhere around. I didn't get to see anybody or meet anybody, but that was my first like gig, I guess. I was probably 16 or 17.
Yeah. Now, how did you even get into this in the first place?
Well, I have always acted. I was about 2 or 3.
Right.
I would force people into the living room and I'd up on the hearth and I'd do my Paul Lynn impression. Which killed.
Of course it did. Of course it did.
John Wayne impression.
Nice.
And Jimmy Carter, which, you know, doesn't age me at all. But, you know, yeah, I mean, I would put on shows and I would get my cousins and my friends on the block and everybody, and we would put on shows.
Yep.
And at one point, my grandmother, my nanny, gave me an 8mm camera and we never had any film for it. But I used to get neighborhood kids in costume and everything and we'd rehearse shots and stuff like that.
Are you serious?
Yeah. There's a picture of me and I look like I was going to be a Mexican bandit. And, you know, at five or six, I literally look like Speedy Gonzalez. There's a picture of me. I got a big sombrero that someone brought back from Mexico. And I had a Starsky and Hutch. Remember the, I don't know if you remember their guns, but the playset.
Okay.
I had the 57.
Nice.
So I had a holster and all this shit. But I told you, I look like Speedy Gonzalez. Like, that if you were to, now people would be like, that child is racist. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no. Yeah. There would be a warrant out for your arrest now. Yeah. They'd be filing charges.
I always have. I remember watching a play that this other kid in my grade was in when I was like in first grade. I didn't know about the auditions. Like, I never know about anything. Shit just kind of lands in front of me or I fall into it. And I was watching this kid and he was playing Dopey in The Seven Dwarves. And I remember being really pissed because I didn't like the way that he was playing Dopey. And I was literally like in first grade going, are you fucking
That's not Dopey. I'll show you Dopey.
My friend, well, what about Dopey's deep in a pain? He can't speak for crying out loud. You know what I mean? Like, but I remember that. And then I got a chance to do a play in sixth grade and I got one of the leads.
Nice.
And of course, then I got applause.
Right.
And I lost my friggin' mind. Like, I got really big laughs and, you know, I was a ham and all that.
Yeah.
I've been, you know, performing for years at this point.
Sure.
And I did a couple of plays, and then where I lived, I'm originally from Ohio. Where I lived in Ohio, the high school didn't have a theater. So I used to go down to the principal every day and bug him about, you know, hey, can we do a play? You know, you got a stage in there, you got lights, can we do? And he never let me. But
okay.
Apparently after I moved, they did a show I know of. So we moved to Charlotte. Charlotte had a drama department. So right off the bat, I get to go act.
Beautiful.
You know what I mean? Oh, I was very excited. Of course, it was at Geringer.
Oh,
and
right.
My teacher at the time, who I love very dearly, but I had him for English and then drama, 2 periods in a row. And he would check everybody in before class, then walk away.
Yep.
I think he went back to the theater to drink. And then at the end, he'd come back to check us back in. So we would like, after he'd leave, we'd all walk up to the store, get some candy or whatever, then come back, just be sure. And I had him for 2 periods.
Oh, my gosh.
But, I mean, honestly, it's like, what a great introduction to actors.
Sure. This is how they live.
The kids, oh, God. I need a drink, you know. I did summer stock in Trenton. This is ridiculous. You know. But
then
I got into the Children's Theater. Like, when we first moved to Charlotte, and the first 2 weeks, I called Children's Theater, found out there was an audition there. Rebecca Kuhn.
Yes.
Auditioned me and my dad, who read with me.
Oh, wow.
And we did a scene from On Golden Pond. And my dad was great. She even talked to my dad like more than me. I'm like, really? My dad's going to get the, you know. But she was super sweet. I got into a play with her and then just started children's theater, you know, around Charlotte.
I mean,
loved it. That was very, very good times. I love theater. And then I had gotten into a couple schools that I wanted to go to. And I was working construction. And I was an audition every so often, and I just shaved my head a couple nights before at a party. I was drunk and I was
right
in front of the mirror and there was a clippers and there it was. But actually, I think really helped me get this part.
Yeah,
it's like a couple days later, I auditioned for something. They're like, oh, it's a pilot, it probably won't go, but you know, you should come in, it could be some money. And I auditioned and it was the next day they're like, they want you in LA.
And I'm like, yeah, I'm on a construction site. I'm building houses at the time. And every time someone would call, they'd have to call my boss's phone.
Oh, my God.
Because nobody had cell phones. Nobody had any of that.
Right.
So the truck would start beeping. And my boss, who was very proud of being an asshole,
yeah,
son of a bitch, you're going to owe me money for this, Stacy, you piece of... And he answered the phone, and he's like, oh, it's a goddamn agent. And they're saying, they want you in L.A. tomorrow to audition for this thing.
Oh, my God.
I'm like, what? Okay. And my dad said, the phone starts, you know, the truck starts beeping a lot. My dad's calling. Everyone's trying to call me to get me to... And I finished out the day, and I went home, and, you know, everyone's freaking out. And I was just kind of like... It's just, to me, it was like, okay, what, you know, what is exactly happening right now?
Sure.
Because I was thinking, I just want to go to school. I don't want a TV show. I want to go, you know, like, but that's, the money, if, you know,
course,
it's a pilot, it'll probably cancel, get some dough. I can dick around the rest of the summer. You
right.
know what I mean? That's
right.
what I'm thinking. So they flew me out, and within like 20 minutes, they fly me over to Paramount. I'm in the front gate at Paramount, you know, and I walk, there's two other actors, both from New York. And
okay.
this is like a Southern character.
Yes.
So I didn't stand a chance.
No.
Walk in and I got my sleeves cut off and I got red mud on my pants because I was a construction, you know, building houses.
Right.
Sleeves are cut off and I yep. got a shaved head that I yep. did myself. You know, and I mean, I must have looked to them like, oh my God, you walked right out of the script. But I walked in and I read with David Keith, who yep. was awesome. And I love David. He's fantastic. I haven't talked to him in a long time, but
yep.
great guy. Took good care of me when I was out there.
That's awesome.
And I said the first line, and there must have been like 40 people in this room.
Wow.
I didn't know it. They were up against it. They couldn't find anybody to play this part. And they mm-hmm. wanted to get started and all that. So I said the first line, and the room like just exploded in laughter. Like enough so that it scared me, and I was just trying to hold on to my shit and stay in character.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So I kind of looked at him in character, and then David Keith burst into laughter. And then, you know, 10 minutes later, they send me out of the room, and they come out, and they're... They send the two other actors away, and they're like, you got it. We're shooting
wow.
this, shooting the pilot.
Oh, my
so
God.
So in Hollywood to shoot the pilot. And, you know, they put me up at the Hotel Roosevelt, which was pretty friggin' cool. But I, you know, I didn't know anything. I never, ever planned to go to L.A. I was always New York. I was going to go to New York. I was going to do theater. I didn't care about any of that shit. You know what I mean?
How old are you at this point?
I was 19.
19 years old.
Yes, sir.
Kid gets plucked from Mooresville, North Carolina, off of a construction site, and literally overnight, your life is completely changed.
Yeah. Well, I was actually shacking up with a chick at that time, so I wasn't in Mooresville. I was in Charlotte.
Okay.
most of that was correct.
And now you're in L.A., you have a TV series, and you're on set. Like that.
Yeah. And at that point, it was, you know, it was just a pilot. I didn't know anything else about it. But right after I got the part, they're like, oh, yeah, and, you know, they bought 12 more episodes. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I'm like, well, this is good.
Right.
But I had these schools where I was like, yeah, I'm going to be there. I just, you know, next summer. So I had to call these, which is pretty funny when I think about it now, call them and tell them, I'm not going to be able to come to your school because I have a TV show on NBC.
Right.
And I really, you know, honestly, I just wanted to go to school. I didn't plan any of that shit.
What were the schools that were waiting, that you were – planning on going to?
North Carolina School of the Arts.
Oh,
I really
yeah.
want to go to.
Great program.
Yeah. And I, you know, it was close to my folks and all that. And SUNY Purchase in New York.
Yeah.
Which I got, you know, I got into both places. I tried a couple others and I didn't do them. So I had to cancel those things. And then all of a sudden I have a TV show.
So now you're so literally then overnight you're living in LA. You're there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So what the hell was that like for you at 19, being plucked from everything that you knew and being thrown into this environment that I'm sure you were like, what the fuck is this? What happened?
Well, I think part of it was good that I was 19 because I was too dumb to really recognize my situation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, to me, it was just, okay, I got a job.
Right.
But I'm in L.A. I don't know anybody. The people from the cast were really awesome and kind of took, you know, hung out with me. So I had kind of instant friends.
Okay.
I think we shot the pilot and then it was a couple months before we really got to shooting.
Yep.
So I was able to go back to North Carolina for a little bit and then come back out and move out. Yeah. Honestly, at first, I guess it just blew my mind because I don't know how I felt about it. I just remember it was like, okay, shit. Okay. But it was acting. So I was just, it was a sitcom in front of a live audience. So I got to do a play every week.
Right.
That was awesome. The audience loved me, and I had a friggin' great time. It was an awesome character that I got to have fun with.
It was pretty damn funny. It was pretty damn funny. But the episodes that I saw, I was like, wow, you got, you know, because they gave you, like, all the taglines, all the great punchlines.
Yeah, yeah, and I don't think they meant that to happen, but little by little, just the dumbness, you know what I mean? Just the sweet dumbness, I think, won people over. And right. It was fun.
So then the show gets canceled, unfortunately.
Yes.
Did they air all 11 episodes?
Yes. Like all, I think it ended up being 12. It was supposed to be 13.
Right.
But showed 12.
Why didn't you come back to North Carolina at that point?
Well, I mean, honestly, there was some interest with some other things. I was getting really good auditions. I had a really good agent. And, you know, I didn't know what I was doing. At that point, the idea of like going to school didn't really make sense to me.
Yep.
Which I still wish I had, honestly. Like that, I wish I had. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I was working. So I get to learn on the go. I just kind of kept at it for a while. And then little by little, you know, you end up working jobs here and there, getting some more parts, you know. But I also, in order to survive, I ended up delivering pizzas.
Oh my God.
When I was making that money, I mean, fortunately, I had a lot of work as a kid. Like I did Prince of Tides before I did this and like some big movies. So like my first apartment, if you came over, there was like wads of hundreds on the dresser.
Are you serious?
Yeah, because I had no concept of money or any of that shit. Right. I had a lot of it and I'd go, you know, I had fun. I had a lot of fun.
Wow.
But same thing when I came to LA, my dad told me at one point, because he was trying to watch my money for me. You know, you've been drawing out like 200, 300 bucks a day.
Oh, Jesus.
And this is back in like 91.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, but yeah. I did. I partied. I had a really good time. And I guess that's probably how I dealt with how overwhelming it kind of was, because I didn't know what to do. I had no reference point.
Right.
I knew nothing about nothing.
Right.
Except how to act. Even that, I was wanting to study. You know what I mean? Like, I was just a kid actor. So.
Did the city freak you out at all, like being in Los Angeles?
Well, of course. The place that I pick is, like, in the worst possible neighborhood. It's, like, Crack City, say.
Oh, jeez.
And I didn't know anything about parking. Like, if you move to Hollywood, you make sure you have parking.
Right.
And I lived right off of Hollywood Boulevard. And nowadays, it's a little bit more like Times Square. Like, they've dressed it up. Yeah, back then they would close the big iron gates and all that. And it was like homeless people and crack. It was like really nasty.
Man.
And I lived right up the street from that. And, you know, I mean, it was interesting. But I always kind of find myself in like that kind of place. You know what I mean? But it was cool. I tried it. I really did. And I did get some work here and there. You know what I mean? Like.
So just for everybody's benefit, I'm chatting here with my very good friend, Chris Stacey, that I have not seen in years. And this is like the most fun that I've had, the most excited that I've been in a long, long time. If you go back, Chris was in the movie Prince of Tides. He was in Mr. Destiny with Jim Belushi. He was in TV series was Flesh and Blood that he was talking about. Chris did Quantum Leap. You remember that show? Matinee with John Goodman. The John Larroquette Show.
And Kathy Moriarty, who was his friggin' sweetheart.
Oh, well, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Oh, she's sweet. totally had a thing for her.
Jimmy Hollywood with Joe Pesci and Christian Slater.
Yes, sir. That was one of the funner ones, I think.
A movie called Stolen Memories with Mary Tyler Moore. I made note of this one because the character name is my favorite. Young Cletus.
And I got to drown Mary Tyler Moore when she was six.
Oh, really?
Yes. I had to dunk a six-year-old girl.
Take out some rage.
I did it with gusto. The director was very happy. We got it in one take. You know?
Let her go.
Yeah. No, I was like, boom, play dead. I yelled at her, play dead. She was start crying. And she, you know, I turned up crying off, play dead. So no one could sit. And she laid down on my shoulder. We got the take.
Boom.
Yeah, Bob Clark. He came up and I worked with him again after that because I think he was so happy that he got that in one take. He was like, I want to help you. I didn't tell him at the time that no one could help me.
You know? You kill little girls real good.
Well, she didn't die. She got brain damage. So,
it's a fine line. Also, The Last Stand at Sabre River with Tom Selleck. You also appeared in Home Improvement and, Modern Family. Yeah. I saw that episode of Modern Family. Obviously, you know, we hadn't been in touch in a while. And, you know, I watched the show regularly and you fucking popped up. And I was like, oh, my God.
That was really weird because, I hadn't really been chasing it. And I'd done actually a martial arts seminar.
Okay.
And this guy at the thing was an agent. And he was like, well, you know, do you have an agent? And I was like, well, not really. I haven't really. He's like, well, I'm an agent. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Yep.
Like, at this point, I'm like, I don't care, dude. It's not really my interest. But they got me in to see that. And it was the same casting director from Flesh and Blood.
Oh my God.
So like 20 some years earlier, Jeff Greenberg.
Did he remember you?
Yes. Yes. Cause I had read for him since the show. And then he had me in a couple times and I got close a couple times. Thanks to him going to network on a couple shows, but didn't quite. I gave a good read or whatever. And they're like, yeah, okay. And I'm like, yeah, well, it sounds good to me.
Sweet. Now, when did it start and why, if you want to talk about it, like when did it start kind of like falling off and falling away? Like when all the excitement that followed Flesh and Blood and the handful of things that happened after that I just listed, when did it start kind of?
Well, honestly, I think during Flesh and Blood.
Yeah.
I had been so spoiled with like a theater background. And I mean, you know, the theater community in Charlotte is just, you know, just the greatest people in the world. You know what I mean? It's a family and it's warm and all the good stuff, you know?
Yes.
And then all of a sudden I'm thrown into Los Angeles and a TV show and the business, which I knew nothing about the business at all. You know what I mean? And I tried it. And honestly, I mean, the work was nice, but, you know, a lot of auditions, a lot of, it just wasn't satisfying like theater. So,
okay.
I mean, it was always great to get a gig.
Yeah.
But then the gig would end and I'd end up, you know, delivering pizzas or doing whatever the hell I was doing, you know?
Yep.
So I think it just kind of soured me, like the business end of it. And I think, honestly, I'm a good actor, but I'm not good at the business of acting.
Right.
I'm probably terrible at it.
I get that.
Like, suck at auditions. I'm not, I'm just very, like, if I get to act, I can do it. I'm great. But, like, to get the parts and to do the business end of it.
Right. And I mean, I've talked about that with a lot of people. I mean, to me, it's no different than playing sports as a kid. Like when you're a kid and you're playing baseball or football or basketball, you're playing it because it's fun and you want to play it. And then if you're fortunate enough to get to that point where you can do it as a profession, it becomes a completely different animal.
Yeah. You know? Well, for me, it's like I get a little work, and then you go for long periods with nothing.
Right.
And you get a little bit more desperate because then you're thinking, well, do I want to even stay in L.A.?
Right.
See if I can get another gig. So every audition you're going to, you have that weird pressure on yourself to get the gig, and that's never going to work, you know. And I did, you know, I made a little money here and there, but I've always had to work. And honestly, it's the idea of having an acting career and making a living as an actor was very strange to me. Wow. Like, I honestly because I've gotten over it, but I had enough of like a blue collar mentality that this isn't really a job. This is fun. We're going to enjoy it. Money's coming in and the actresses are awesome. And, you know, I'm having a great time.
Yep.
But it just never seemed like a real thing. And the way it would pop off, it, you know, it's great. I like, honestly, people were happier for me than I was when I'd get a gig. I'd be like, okay, I got a gig.
Yeah.
I'm unemployed again. You know what I mean? And to live out here, it's, you know, for all those years when I was young and, you know, you weren't making any money.
Right.
It's hard. So, you know, I ended up doing other things, and I really enjoy, like, the production aspects of, you know, acting and stuff like that, too. Like, I gotten into filmmaking pretty heavily.
Yes. Because
I have more of a handle on it, because I make it.
So you like to be a bigger part of the creative collaboration and the creative process, for sure.
I like for all that shit to be mine.
Right.
Like, yeah, I mean, I'm a little bit of a control freak, but the fact that I get to write it and make it, like, I still think, oh, you know, maybe I should just go get an agent and keep dicking around, because it's great. You get a gig, make a little money, residuals, and you never know. That's usually when the guy, like, gets the big job, when he stopped caring 10 years ago and all
Absolutely. Absolutely. See, you're a comeback story waiting to happen.
Oh, God, no, please, please.
You're the next Mickey Rourke.
Oh, God. Get a knife. I went to a party that Mickey Rourke was at.
Jesus.
It was a Super Bowl party at David Keith's house, and I was drinking and all that. Oh yeah, there's a bunch of Corbin Burnson was there, and the guy from there was a bunch of people. This guy starts talking to me, and he's like, "Oh, so you're an actor?" And I'm like, "Yeah, yeah." And I was like, "What do you do?" And he's like, "Oh, I'm an actor." I'm like, "Oh, okay, cool." And I just kind of ignored him, and it was Mickey Rourke.
You didn't know that it was him. You didn't recognize him.
Like, honestly, he didn't really look like him.
Things started going rough.
Well, it was just like, you know, that was the classic story. It's like, I could have met this awesome actor, which probably could have given me some great advice. And I don't
Or some great stories, at least.
At least I got that.
Now, do you miss acting?
I miss the theater. I miss rehearsal. I like to prepare. I mean, in that sense, Mm-hmm. I mean, I go see plays still and I enjoy them, but it's the same old thing like when I was a kid watching Dopey. I would like to be.
Now, I know that you did the Groundlings and you did Second City in L.A., and was that a comparable equivalent to doing theater for a while?
It was fantastic. Because I had done a little bit of stand-up and actually had some good luck.
Finally did some stand-up.
Yes, and I actually, people were starting to want to book me, and I did a couple shows, and I didn't like repeating the act.
Right.
Like, I get bored very, very easy.
Right.
And so improv was like the perfect fit, because I don't remember half the shit that I've said in my life. I'll have people come and say, "Oh, I remember the thing you said? You were talking about the thing," and I'm like, "I have no idea what you're talking about. And I'm sorry, but I hope you got a laugh."
Right, right.
But yeah, Groundlings was a little rough because I was during my divorce.
Okay.
In there, so it was kind of a weird time for that. But I got really good training there, honestly. Yep. Even though I kind of have a bad taste in my mouth from it, I think it was the divorce and just the negative time when it all ended.
Is it competitive in those groups in L.A. because everybody was trying to get a shot at SNL or?
Groundlings was super competitive.
Really.
And I didn't like that about it. But, yeah. Second City is a bunch of sweethearts. Like, we had the best time. Everybody was very loving, and it was really a good time. It really was. And it kind of, that's a good way to help me organize my thoughts, too, because I was kind of all over the place. But like, you learn the rules of improv, and it just kind of makes you a little better at all that stuff.
Sure.
Of course, it makes things stop being funny to me as well, because I can see the setup. They ruined it. When I edit now, right? I edit, like, my little movies and stuff, and so now when I watch a film, all I see is the edits.
That makes sense.
I worked at a special effects shop, and so now all I see is like, oh, the latex. I mean, this is old school.
Well, I was going to say, like, has it taken some of the fun out of it for you then?
Yeah. But that's why I like making stuff myself. It doesn't at all, because then I get to do all of it. I get to create everything. And it's surprising. It's constantly surprising.
We'll be back with Chris Dacey in just a moment. You're listening to You May Have Seen, part of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. Leave us a comment or review after the show. I love when that happens. Or email us at youmayhaveseen@gmail.com. We'll give you a shout out in an upcoming episode, like, hey, check it out. People are listening. Yay. Okay. Here's more with Chris Dacey. Are you doing, like, is that your full-time thing now? Are you just a full-time writer, producer, director, /actor, creative genius?
Yes. I have a little lab downstairs. I'm shooting some green screen stuff for a little short film I'm making called Ugly Cop.
Awesome.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm doing. My wife is pregnant. So in May, see how that goes. I don't know if I have time to do, but as of right now, that's what I'm doing. And it's great. It's very satisfying.
So when did you stop working for Otto?
December 26th, after 22 years.
You just ended it.
Oh,
my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that was great. I learned everything and more than I'd ever want to know about cameras or lenses, all that stuff. And it kept me afloat for a long time. But
wow, that's a hell of a run. 22 years working for Otto Nimmons.
Yep, incredible. And I was also commuting from Oxnard to L.A. for the last 5 years, so it was like 115 miles a day through L.A. traffic. Yeah, it's not good.
That's nuts.
Oh, it sucked. But that like now, yeah, now I get to create and write and work on my stuff.
Were you ever intimidated to be on set, nervous to be on set? Was it ever nerve-wracking for you at all? Like, oh, shit, I'm working with, whoever or...
My mistake was, I don't think I was nervous. I don't get starstruck.
Yeah.
Well, I met the guy that played Billy Jack, and I got starstruck by that.
Did you?
Yeah, because I'm a moron. I met Richard Pryor. That, I was starstruck.
Oh, my God. Tell me about that.
This was actually at the Laugh Factory in Los Angeles, so I saw him perform. And I went there, I sat in the front row, and this was after, he was in really bad shape, like the MS pretty bad. And he got up and he was doing the show, and I had one of his albums that I've had since, like, I stole it from my brother in like 76, like I was six.
Yep.
And it was Super N-Word.
Oh, yeah.
Know that album. And I'm sitting there with it in front of me, and, he comes out, and I'm like shaking. Richard Pryor, and he's like 3 feet from, he's right there.
Right. Right.
And he looks at the album, and he's like, who's that motherfucker? And I'm like, oh my God, Richard Pryor talking to me. And I'm like, that's you, sir. Like, my voice cracked and everything. And he said, Well, let me, you know, I'll sign that for you after the show. I was like, thank you, sir. And I just sat there and watched him. And even though he was messed up, he was still great. Tommy was still great. After the show, they had, they said, you can come around and meet Mr. Pryor. And I had a Sharpie and I had my album. And he had two really large men with him, like bodyguards.
Yep.
And they were the ones who helped him into his chair. I mean, he was pretty sick at this point. And they're both standing over me like mountains. And he's in his wheelchair. And I hand him the album. And I go to hand him the pen. But I think I'm going to be helpful. So I'm going to hold on to the cap. So he can just pull the pen out. Right. So all of a sudden, I'm in a tug of war with Richard Pryor because he can't pull the cap off. And I'm looking at these two giant men going, I am not fucking with him. I am not fucking with him. And I, you know, finally I just said, sir, sir, sir. And I gave him the cap and I'm like, oh my God. And he wrote a really nice note and I still, I have it framed. But it was, you know, it's just one of those things where you're just like, that's when I'm starting. I mean, Richard
right.
Pryor.
Of course. Me. No, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Now, you also, I remember you telling me when you first started working on Flesh and Blood that you got to work with Leslie Nielsen.
Yes, he was awesome.
Tell me about that.
We were instantly buddies. Like, as soon as I met him, we started being silly. And he would carry a, he had a fart noise maker, like a really high dollar one. Like, this, these were designed and made for Leslie Nielsen. And he would walk into, like, you know, there's always suits.
Yep.
There's always the executives, always the right. suits. And we'd be playing around, and he would walk into the group of them and, you know, keep a very stone face and set off the, like, make the fart noise. And he could control it. So he could, like, make it chirp, just whatever he wanted. And he would, he almost always picked a woman. And he'd go, Madame. Everyone started laughing, you know. And so I got into a long conversation with him about the fart noise maker and where I could get him. And his wife gave me all the information so
oh
I could.
My God. That.
And he was just great. Like, I remember at the end of the show, there's a picture of us where I'm leaning my head against his chest. And I mean, I love that guy. Like yeah. we immediately hit it off and we're being silly.
That's amazing.
People would come up to him and you could see him. He'd turn his hearing aid off. He'd turn it off. And then he would just say some nonsense and eventually they would walk away. And then when I'd walk up, he would turn it on. So he wanted it. You know, because he liked being silly with me. We're like, right, like yeah. And, he was awesome. He was an amazing guy. He was really, really a sweetheart and a gentleman, like old school. He kind of reminded me of my grandpa. Just very elegant and, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Awesome. A gentleman.
Tell me how it was working with Barbara Streisand, aside from her saying, you're going to fucking kill him. Like, how did that not weird you out at all?
That was really crazy because that audition was in South Carolina and I had to go down there like four times. Like, I had like crazy number of callbacks.
Oh,
okay. I didn't care at the time. I was young and I had a car. But she was really cool. And I think right off the bat, she liked me and she said, you know, because you had to pretend to shoot a gun. She said to me, well, you know, have you ever shot a gun? And I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah. You know, I was a Boy Scout and I'm originally from Ohio. So they kind of make you learn how to shoot guns. So I thought that was funny. And I told her, I was like, but I would never shoot an animal or kill anything. I like to target shoot. And she, he is such a sweetheart. He is such a sweetheart. And I think that, you know, because it's true. I wasn't like trying to kiss her. But once we got to set, once I did finally get the part, she was awesome. She'd show up in like her pajamas and like a white t-shirt with her hair up. Like, she didn't give a shit. She was, directing it. She was doing all everything. And, you know, she'd say, Chris, my little sweetie. I was her little sweetie. She was super cool and intense. You know, like when she directed, she was a great director.
Of course.
And the funniest thing to me, and I'll never forget, was when we're doing the scene in Prince of Tides, the big, you know, rape scene where I'm looking through the window. We first see Luke.
Yes.
And I didn't know what to do there. They got me standing on this little pedestal and stuff. And I'm, you know, I was like, okay. But she, I was like, okay, I got to be pissed off looking like I'm seeing, you know, my family being raped. Heavy stuff. A little heavy. But she comes up to me and I'm already like mindset, you know, Mr. Method. I'm pissed. This is actually happening. Like the makeup lady was spritzing me with water and I could tell that she was like a little freaked out. Like he's going to blow his top. Like just get him wet and get away from him. Because I was like,
Right.
And I'm staying in character. Barbara comes up. She's like, okay, Chris. And long nails, very long nails. And everything was like kind of in your face and the finger, the nose, you know, Barbara Streisand. And she's like, okay, Chris, so you're seeing this and you want to kill these motherfuckers. And I'm like, Barbara Streisand just said to me, you want to kill these motherfuckers. And I'm supposed to be serious right now. And you know, I'm like, okay. And I just stayed in it. And, you know, she was like, you got it. I was like, I got it. And she walked away. And we shot it, you know, we shot it quite a few times. But honestly, I could have just like made a sad face and you could have shot the window and it would have worked the same. As, like, the she was awesome. She was awesome. And Kate Nelligan, who played my mom, she was the first like actress that I like asked about acting. Just said, what, you know, what's the difference between this and the stage? And she said, about 75% of it is done by the cinematographer. She was great, man. She'd really get into it. She was a great actress. There were a lot of good actors on that. I met George Carlin on that. Yeah, we did a table reading and everybody was there. And George Carlin was there. That was another one I got a little starstruck. But he had a t-shirt on that said for the band Bong Water. And I saw his shirt. I said, oh, I like your shirt. And he looked at me and went, hey. I'm pretty sure he was thinking if he could ask me for weed or not. You know, at the time I looked like I was like 15. So, but he was very nice. He was cool.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, I used to. Yeah, I was very, very into it and focused and probably a little crazy.
Gotcha.
Because it always like affect me in my normal life. Yeah. Like depending on what I was playing, it would affect my behavior. So it wasn't always a joy to be around necessarily.
I get that.
Yeah, it was, you know, full commitment. And, you know, with theater and stuff like that, it's great that you can do that. You know what I mean? Because you live in that little beautiful bubble and you get to create something. You know what I mean? Where if you get the ad or the job for like a film or something, it's like, you know, you get a couple lines or whatever, but it's not so much we say unless you're a name or something. And even then, hopefully you'll listen to your director. You know what I mean?
You've always seemed completely fearless. Like, you've never been afraid to jump in the middle of any conversation, situation. And it's just like, you know, to me, it's always been kind of mind-blowing. I'm like, watch this guy go. And I'm just wondering, like, is that an act or is it more that you just really want to have fun? Like,
yeah,
all the
time?
Honestly,
it's like certain people set me off more than others. Like, you definitely set me off and we'll start being silly. And we'll go. You know?
Yes.
But I mean, I just want to, in the end, I just want to play. I want to play. Let's get some toys. Let's get a camera, whatever. Let's play.
And obviously that served you well.
Yeah. I mean.
Or has it ever hurt you?
Well, the funny thing is, like, in social situations, I'm better at being open and playful than I am. Like I said, I was never very good at auditions. Like, there's a few that I nailed, obviously, and I got the game. I've never been good at it. And if anything, I think you'd be surprised. I can be very quiet. Like, when I'd be on set for, like you said, did anybody make me nervous? I wouldn't get nervous, but I'd always felt bad about, like, bothering them. So I'd be sitting there with, like, John Goodman, and he's smoking a Marlboro, and I'm smoking a Marlboro, and I'm not really talking to him. I mean, a little bit.
I
but
get
instead
it.
Of being silly and playing with John Goodman, which I know we would have had a great time, I would get kind of quiet and just not want to bother them.
Yeah, and that's always a weird... You know, that's always a weird dance when you're showing up on set and you're like, I don't really know this person. And I, you know.
Yeah. And I think that's always kind of hurt me as well, because I wasn't good at just being open. Like with friends, I get nuts and ape shit.
Yeah.
And people I like to play with, I like to play with no matter what. But in those situations, I would show up, I'd do my job. You know what I mean? Like, okay, this is what I came to do. I'm going to do it. I'm going to get it in one or two takes. They're going to love me. I'm out. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to give him a good take and I'm done. Thank you so much. And now I'm unemployed again. You know what I mean? But yeah, like I said, I was young when I started. So I think I was pretty awkward and uncomfortable for a lot of times.
I want to talk to you about a couple of, I do remember some stories and I hope that you're going to remember them as well. And not tell me, be like, no, you're an idiot. That never happened.
Phones back in the day. Can you imagine?
Gilbert Grape.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Yes.
That's one of the heartbreakers, huh?
Yeah. I mean, you watch it now, and I didn't watch it for friggin' years. And,
Tell everybody about that.
Okay.
Fill them in, if you don't mind.
I went and I got this audition, and it was for Lasse Hallström, who I already liked as a director. I didn't know that much about film, but I liked him, and I knew who he was.
Right.
And I go in for the audition, and it's... I don't know. I killed it. Like, immediately the lady's on the phone and da-da-da-da. And she's like, thank you so much. That was brilliant. And it's for the little brother. It's for...
Arnie,
yeah. Right. And so I left. And I was feeling pretty good about it. And she even called me at home and had called my manager. So I'm thinking, oh, this is going great. And I had no idea who Leonardo DiCaprio was at the time. Like, he had done, like, A Boy's Life or something. Like, he was already kind of bopping around. And really, I mean, obviously a really great actor. And I made it to a callback, and the casting lady called me at home and everything. And I went in to meet the director, Lasse Hallström. And he's like, you know, just, you know, do what you did before, you know, you're brilliant. Just do what you did before. And I went in and I read it again, and he was like stunned. And shook my hand. And as I was leaving, he's like, "You were brilliant. You're brilliant." And I left. I'm like, you know what? I just fucking good that shit. You know, right. Like, just good that shit. And then a couple of days later, I get a call from the casting lady. And I'm at home and I'm like, "Oh, hi." And I'm thinking, okay, this is kind of weird that she's calling me.
Yep.
And she's like, "I just called to apologize to you." She's like, "I picked you for that role." And she's like, "In my 20 some years or whatever, I've never been wrong." And I was like, "Oh, well, you know, I really appreciate your call." And I mean, looking back, I was older and bigger. I was bigger than Leonardo DiCaprio. Like, but she was like, I was like, "Well, did they say why I didn't get the part?" And she said, "Yeah, he said that your head wasn't malformed enough." Yeah. And that's what I was like,
"What?"
Okay. And then I'm thinking, well, maybe they're going to hire someone who's got like a giant head or, okay, that's the weirdest note I've ever. Okay. That's what he
said.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for calling. And then, of course, it comes out and it's Leonardo DiCaprio and he's friggin' genius and brilliant and beautiful. And
sure.
You know.
Oh, my God. But yeah,
it came down to me and Leonardo DiCaprio for that. And
God.
He's jealous of my career. I hate to drive him crazy with this, but sorry, Leo. You know, pal. But you know, there's a bunch of. I mean, the misses I think are the more interesting stories than the actual.
Well, yeah. I mean, was that a tough one to get over?
Oh yeah, that one took a long time because I read it so bad, and that's when I was really feeling frustrated with like what this acting was, because that was a great meaty part that I would have killed. I would have loved to do. So I got super excited about that. And when that one kind of went away, I mean, it didn't end then, but at that point it was like, okay, you know, I get episodic and that's great. But, you know, once again, you work a couple of days or a week and then you're unemployed again.
Right.
And I still have to pay rent, you know, so.
Yeah.
But it was awesome. It's all awesome. I mean, I've had a good time. I would say I've had a really good time. I grabbed Jerry Seinfeld's wrist in front of Jason Alexander and David Keith. Not David Keith, what's his name?
Larry David.
Geez.
Okay, yes.
But do you remember the episode where the double dipping the chip episode?
Mm-hmm.
I auditioned for that part. Well, and I was completely unaware of the show. I didn't watch the show. I didn't watch TV. I was, you know, Mr. Method and, you know,
right.
The world and all that shit. And I was doing a lot of martial arts at the time because that actually made me happy. And so we go to do the lines, and it's Jerry Seinfeld. I mean, everybody's in there.
Wow.
Because I had just gotten off this TV show, or maybe I was even doing the TV. I don't know. But
sure.
So I immediately grabbed Jerry Seinfeld by the wrist, like too hard. Like I immediately go, "Oh, shit." I am now holding Jerry Seinfeld's wrist. And he looks at me and then looks at everybody in the room, and they're all just like, we're all just like this really uncomfortable moment. Like, it was like an episode.
Right.
Like, okay, what do I do? Should I let go of his hand now? Do I panic? Jerry, you know? And I just kind of did the lines and then let go, and they're like, "Thank you so much." And I left, and I was like, "Oh, you dumb shit. You can't grab Jerry Seinfeld. You can't just snatch Jerry Seinfeld by the wrist." I didn't get that. So obviously, yeah, I didn't get that one either.
So that was the beginning of the end. Okay.
No, you know, I don't know when the end happened. You know, it may not have fucking hit yet. That's what's
right. Going to
be. It could be tomorrow.
Is there a story about Encino Man?
Yes. And this, oh boy. That's another one that I'll see every so often. I'm like, you know, shit. But yeah, when they were trying to get that film made, I was doing Flesh and Blood. So I was on a TV show, and my manager at the time sent me the script and was like, "Yeah, they're interested in you. If you could just, you know, read it and give us some feedback."
Right.
And, you know, okay, first of all, I had my head up my ass. You know, you got a TV, sure, you think you're king shit. Everybody's right. Constantly telling you you're king shit. You know what I mean? I read this thing, and I mean, it was what it was. You know, I wanted to do friggin' Shakespeare. I didn't want the Encino Man. What the hell? I read it and I was like, okay, you know what? This is terrible, blah, blah. Because I'm a dumbass. And, so I called my manager. I was like, "Oh, yeah, no, I have no interest in doing this." And she's like, "Oh, okay, well, I'm glad you read it. Thank you." You know, because you didn't want to mess. You know, I was the actor or whatever.
Of course.
And I could kick myself because, once again, I mean, I think I would have totally, if I had just read, I would have gotten it. And it was the Brendan Fraser part.
Oh, my God. And his career didn't go anywhere.
I've helped a couple people with their careers.
Well, you're a generous guy. You're a giver.
I am. Son of a woman. I got very close to that part.
Oh, really? The Chris O'Donnell role?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. They flew me to New York and everything.
And that would have been interesting.
Then I gave a shitty audition and left.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah. I was chasing a chick at the time.
Oh, man.
That seemed more important.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I could have. It's one of those moments where if I just said, oh, please let me try it again, it would have been great. But I was just like, wow. Meh.
Al who? Al who?
Yeah, just dumbass, you know. Because, I mean, I was working. I had a TV show. I was like,
right.
That one I should have been smarter about. I wasn't. I was a kid, so. But not smarter.
You're crazy happy. I wouldn't want you to get any smarter.
Thank you.
Because then I wouldn't have anyone to talk to. So talk to me about your martial arts fetish. Is that like porn to you?
Fetish?
Yeah.
Fetish. It's a fetish.
Yeah. Oh, now I've offended you. Now you're offended.
No, it's okay. It is.
No, but I mean, obviously I'm teasing you, but I mean, you know, that's a big part of your life. I know you've started to incorporate it into some of your film projects. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you've always had an interest in it. And where did that come from? What does that do for you?
Well, it makes me happy, and it always has. Yeah. So that's why I continue to do it. You know, I grew up with two older brothers, and mm-hmm. The parents would go to dinner or something like that, and we'd set up the living room as like a gladiator cage, and we'd snap out of each other and learn how to wrestle and, you know, all
right,
that stuff.
Right.
So I was always kind of fighting and wrestling, and I had my brother Mike used to let me punch his friends in the stomach. Because I was really tiny, so I was really small. And my brother Mike's 3 years older than me. He's like, hey, let my little brother punch you in the stomach. They'd be like, this little kid, because they look like a toddler, you know. And they'd let me, and I knew to hit him in the solar plexus, so he'd knock the wind out of him.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that would, like, really hit these kids. So that was fun.
Yes.
So then I wrestled, and I did all that. But I got into martial arts when I was 11. There was mm-hmm. a neighbor up the street who's still a dear friend of mine, Andrew Ryder, who lives in Ohio. And he was a black belt in Taekwondo. And I always wanted to go study Taekwondo because I was in the Kung Fu theater like crazy. Like I would watch these movies and try to imitate the moves and all that shit.
Yep.
I had like water bottles hanging in the garage and I'm all sorts of shit. Like Shaolin shit. Seriously, I was into it, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Barns and jumping off of the roof and just all sorts of shit. But I finally, my parents, I could never go because they were like, well, we can't really afford it. Da, 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 da. So I was like, okay. And he was in my sister's graduating class. And at the graduation, my parents said, you know, if you want to take that class with Andy, you can. I went over to him. I was all excited. And he said, they closed the school.
Oh, balls.
Oh, okay. And he said, but if you're at my house at 7 a.m. tomorrow, I'll teach you. And I was like, oh, my God. Because this guy was my hero. He used to walk up to his martial arts class with like a fucking samurai sword on his back. And
nice.
Dude, samurai. Ohio samurai. But so I started training with him and great teacher, really gave me a good like basis for it where it was a good healthy thing, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I've always found different arts, and you come to LA.
Yep.
I got really into my uncle's Chinese, but he grew up in the Philippines for a long time until his family had to move. And so I was always interested in the Philippines. And then I found out, you know, Bruce Lee, then Dan and Osanto, and I learned about Filipino martial arts. So I kind of became obsessed with it. And then I found this master in a Filipino town that I started training with. And then I became one of his instructors. And this has been going on for years and years and years.
Right.
And I don't know. It's the one thing that never gets old. It's like the thing I love about it is it's kind of like acting. When you're in the moment acting and you're like, you're one with the world. There's no future. There's no past. You know, like that moment. It's the same moment when someone swings a stick at your head. Because this has to be dealt with immediately. There's no that instant, which I've always loved. You know what I mean? That moment, that pure moment. And with martial arts, you can get it a lot because it's very real. There's no, you know, there's no avoiding the realness of the situation.
Nope. If you're not in the moment, you're getting hit.
Yeah. But, you know, I just love it. And I've kind of gotten into the, like my one teacher, I've made a point of really learning his art so I can pass it on as he taught it to me. Because a lot of these arts are disappearing. You know, it doesn't seem useful. I mean, like sword and knife fighting and all this stuff that I'm learning. It's like, chances are I'm not going to use it. But it's still an art form. And
Absolutely. It's
really beautiful and it's history. You know, and even though I'm not a Filipino, I have enough respect for this guy and my new teacher that I want to pass on their arts. And like I say, it makes me happy. And now
that
I'm trying to combine it with my films, you know, I got like, I have as many years in martial arts as I do in acting. and filmmaking. You know, I've been behind the camera forever as well. So I don't know. It's just when I am certainly addicted to it. It's like my one true love. That's what my teacher, Grandmaster Joe Tan, says. It's my lifelong love.
But was it always a desire for you to, you know, take your love and passion for martial arts and turn it, you know, and put it into your acting and your filmmaking?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I kind of did both of them at the same time. That's a really, because it took me a while to realize, oh, wait a minute, you know, I could totally do that. I actually had an acting teacher said to me, he's like, well, aren't you like, you know, a martial arts master or some shit? He's like, why don't you do that? I'm like, well, no. I was like, who's going to hire me to be the killer? You know what I mean? It's like, hi, I'm Tim from up the road. Sword fight you now. And just be known, I'm pretty tough. You know what I mean?
Okay.
I'm not the hero type.
I'm going to tell you right now, though, I would watch that movie.
I know.
I would watch that movie.
That's the movie.
You have to make that.
Yeah.
You have to make that.
But, I mean, it's always been good. It's good for discipline. It's good for movement. It keeps you in pretty good shape, mm-hmm. you know. And like I said, it's why the same reason I love improv. It is that constant moment of like, okay, just leap, just go.
Right.
Because you don't have a choice, really. And good things always come out of it. You know what I mean? Like you said, I'm fearless. I do not consider myself fearless. I just don't think about it. And there's been many times in my life where I have certainly paid.
Sure.
And I guess that's fearless. I don't know. I would say it's, you know, thick-headedness, maybe, if anything.
Certainly. I mean, okay, so I think what I've gotten from all this is that you never really had a desire for fame.
No, I just wanted to do theater. I loved it so much, and it made me
right.
so happy, and I just wanted to act.
So, I mean, why didn't you ever come back to the Southeast, where there were more theater opportunities, even regionally, and you did have film and television and on-camera possibilities that weren't going to be as high stress for you as Los Angeles? I mean, why have you, after 30 years, gutted it out in L.A.?
Well, I think, honestly, I did move back, and I ended up doing a couple plays, like professional theater, that I had a great time. And then I got a couple TV movies. And, you know, I don't know when I made the decision or why I made the decision, but it was like, you know what? This seems to be what I end up doing. I might as well go back. Let's go back to L.A. and try to give it a shot. You know, so I went back. But the problem with going back was, when I left, I didn't tell anybody. I didn't tell my old agent. I had a great agent, the artist agency, you know. Innovative Artists was the agency. And they were just kind of starting out. They were pretty big, but they were just kind of starting out. And I just bolted. Like, in the middle of the night, I left L.A.
Oh, wow.
I went up to San Francisco and ended up doing a construction job and, you know, for almost a year. And then moved back to North Carolina. But I came back out. I wanted to give it a shot again, I guess. I don't know. I don't know. It's one of those things where it's like, well, screw it. You know, maybe I was supposed to stay out there. I tried New York for a little bit and it spit me out. You know, that was fun. And I love New York. I always wanted it to be New York. But L.A. kind of brought me back, and I've been out here longer. I've lived here longer than I've lived anywhere. So, you know, it's California's. I'm a Californian at this point.
Yeah, you are. So what's next?
I'm making a film. I don't know. I have this time, and I've considered maybe trying to audition for a play or something, but I really don't have a lot of time, and the baby's, you know, going to be here in May, which is super exciting, but, you know, the ticking clock. But I'm working on a short film right now called Ugly Cop, which is
awesome.
Like a spoof on cops, and it's going to be 6 episodes. Each episode is going to be about a minute and a half, like really short setup joke.
Nice.
Next episode, yeah. And this is all, I'm going to do a lot of green screen. So this little short is testing for a feature film that I'm hoping to make next year, where I'm paying for it. Like I have hardly any money, but I you know, I'll figure something out. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because I want to, in the end, I really want to make films. It really makes me happy. I get to write. I get to act if I want. I get to make props, which really makes me happy.
Yes.
And now if I go work in the martial arts, it's like all I need is a Miller High Life and a sandwich.
There you go.
You know, it looks perfect.
Would you do anything differently? Seeing where you are now, with the way things are going, how your life is, how happy you are, would you go back and do anything over again?
Yeah, well, that's a great question, because it is one of those things. And I've had a lot of regrets, like some of those stories. Like if I just done this different, or if I had just done this, or maybe it was this, you know, and you can't, there's nothing you can do. But also, I'm the type of person that I forget nothing. like the smallest slight. I remember something a kid did to me in third grade. And if I saw him, I would remind him. You know what I mean? Like, I don't forget that. So I have a thick skin, but it's, you know, I guess it's thin underneath. I don't know.
Right.
I've had a lot of years of regrets and just stupid things like blaming myself and all that. And I look back and I was like, you know, most of that, I was a kid.
Yeah.
And in the end, I made the decision I wanted to make. I did not want to be that thing, you know, which you look back and like, well, who knows? Maybe I would have done this. Maybe, you know, and you think, well, yeah, maybe I would have made a lot of money and OD'd. You know what I mean? And they would have found me in feces. You know what I mean? So that's not good either. But I mean, anymore, I just really look at it. It's like I have a beautiful wife who's now pregnant, and my life could not honestly be any better. I have a healthy, happy family. And if I had made any decision differently than I did back in the day, or even recently, I wouldn't be where I am now. Like, I don't think you really get a choice, obviously, but I could not be happier. And I'm still getting to create. And I still, if I want to dabble in some acting, I absolutely will, because I do miss it. It's like martial arts. It's my true love. I don't know. It's harder to express these days, maybe. I don't know, you know?
Well, you just spent the last hour illustrating everything that I said at the beginning and explaining why you are one of my absolute favorite people on the planet and why I could not wait to talk to you. I absolutely miss you, brother. I love you and I miss you and I miss this. And I cannot thank you enough for taking the time to sit down and talk with me and share your stories with me. It's been so, so great. This has been You May Have Seen with Chris Stacy. Thanks so much for listening. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And if you'd like to leave a comment or review, that's always nice. You can also email us at youmayhaveseen@gmail.com if you have a comment or a question, and we'll give you a shout-out in the next episode.